502. McMonagle here with you on the fan. I told you yesterday. I said the Mets have an opportunity to make the Yankees and their fans question themselves on another level. All the holes, the fan base is ready to turn and go nuts about this disgusting display of baseball we have seen over the last 2 weeks from the New York Yankees. And the Mets had an opportunity with Cole on the mound in particular, and now with Stanton not in the lineup, to really stick it to the Yankees like we haven't seen before. And that's exactly what happened. 888-808-1019, 888-808-1019. Let me just tell you right now. Let's start where it begins, right? We're concerned about Stan, concerned about this lineup outside of Soto and Judge, and there is the first inning. And we're going to get to Cole in a second, but for me, this game turns in the first inning. And let me just start where you might not think I'm going to start, because three pitches into this game, something happened that sent me through the roof. The first pitch of this game is Volpe hitting an opposite field base hit. I like that. So far, so good. One pitch in, positive. Feeling good about the first pitch. Then Juan Soto gets 2-0. There's a pitch clock violation. I don't care if he doesn't know what the count is or not. Let me tell you something right now. I love Juan Soto. Love him. Want him to be here. Want him to get paid. In fact, I feel like I was kind of misquoted by our website here at WFAN the other day about when I said the act gets old. It's not exactly how I said it. I was talking about when other teams look at him. But here's the point, right? Getting called, you know, taking timeout, not getting the call timeout, stepping out of the box and taking a strike down the middle is unacceptable. You know what else is unacceptable for a future Hall of Famer? For a guy in the middle of a lineup that right now you know is struggling. You've got JD Davis. It doesn't matter which JD. JD Davis coming here, right, thrusted right into the middle of the lineup. You got the role player Jones DHing. We're all concerned. There's no way they're not aware of what the bottom of the lineup is doing. And you're telling me on a 3-0 count, our premier player, the Lou Gehrig to Aaron Judge's Babe Ruth, is bunting? 3-0? Oh, but Chris, he thought he was 2-0. Well, he thought he was 2-0. From that moment, when Juan Soto actually laid down a bunt, and he didn't even, it wasn't even, for a second I thought sometimes with three balls, maybe you try and, you figure the pitcher's going to throw one down the middle, you don't want to swing at it, you want to take a pitch, you put the fake bunt out there to try and get him confused or whatever, and maybe he'll just give you an easy ball four and you walk the first. He actually laid down the bunt. From that moment on, forget it, I didn't even need the Gleyber Torres at bat. I knew right then and there. And let me just say that about Juan Soto real quick, because he's not the story of this game. He ends up getting on base anyway. But that moment right there pissed me off to a level that's really unreasonable for that situation. How in the world is he bunting? That is, we got on him for, you know, looking for walks. I don't care if the third baseman's playing on the outside of the fence in right field. I don't care if they're holding hands with the left fielder. You cannot bunt there. Then he gets on base. Base is loaded, and there is a microcosm of what this Yankee season, our fears are about this lineup. And Gleyber Torres, there he is. Another thing I told you yesterday, that Gleyber Torres is going to be the guy I look to step up. Gleyber Torres is the guy I'm going to look to actually come through now, especially against left-handed pitching, which in his career he has hit pretty damn well, especially with now Stanton down. Gleyber Torres was going to have to step up. And you know what? I applaud Aaron Boone for batting him cleanup. I see everybody pissed off he's hitting cleanup. No. Who else are you going to hit cleanup? JD Davis? Verdugo in the middle of a slump? Left-handed on lefty? No. You know what, Glaber? You have to step up. I'm going to put you in a position and test you, and he failed miserably. This is about Gleyber Torres and his failures and not where he's put. You can't hide someone in a lineup here. You can't hide him eighth. Gleyber Torres needs to be better. And in that at-bat, swinging at that high fastball, swinging at really everything in that moment, Gleyber Torres, and this is the Gleyber Torres game, really, had this was test number one with standing out of this lineup and being a protection for Aaron Judge, who, by the way, I've called Aaron Judge the best hitter since Barry Bonds. Well, prepare to watch Barry Bonds circa 2003. Prepare to watch Barry Bonds circa 2004. Because why in the world would you ever pitch to this man? You got a guy bunting in front of him. You've got worthless crap behind him. Why in the world would you pitch to Aaron Judge? In the eighth inning of this game, down 9-2, people are right now, the debate is whether or not he should have been walked in that moment with the bases loaded. You are going to see it. I'm shocked you haven't seen it yet. Aaron Judge is not going to be pitched to, and that's the fear, because right now there are no other hitters. And we can quibble about where Gleyber Torres hits and where DJ LeMahieu hits and where all these guys hit. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Gleyber Torres has got to hit, or they're not gonna, or he's not gonna, help the team. And here's the other thing: I understand we all want him jettisoned. I've said it countless times, and people think I'm some sort of Gleyber Torres apologist because I'm daring him to be good, because I'm counting on him. And make no mistake, we can get mad in the postgame sound all we want, and we'll get to the different things about Gleyber Torres and the nonsense he did in this game. They do need him. I'm sorry. This is Gleyber Torres is a 27-year-old player who is, without question, been awful this year. He was their best hitter last year. This is not relying on DJ LeMahieu, who's done nothing in 2 years. This is not the counterpart where I see, Jeff McNeil for Gleyber Torres. Who says no? Jeff McNeil has done nothing for a year and a half. Gleyber Torres was the Yankees' best hitter last year, and he's been absolute trash right now. But they're in a position heading into the deadline the next month. They need him. Stanton's not coming back. There's no trades to be made. You want to play Cabrera? You want to play Jones? We just saw Jones. I don't know if you want to play Jones. I don't know who you want to play, but Gleyber Torres, while I've called him a losing player, Gleyber Torres is a non-winning player. I was a proponent of trading him in the offseason when he had some value coming off the best year he's had since 2019. But none of that changes the fact that they don't have any other answers. You can tell yourself you can't look at him anymore. And obviously, he makes the boneheaded defensive play. I don't know if that's lazy. He's shown laziness in the defense. Don't get me wrong. Drop pop-up, one-handed plays. He's shown laziness. He's shown laziness on the base paths. He's shown laziness on the in the field. That's just a complete botch of a play in an enormous spot. And then, of course, you get to not running the ball out, whether he's got a hip problem. Let me just tell you something right now. In that situation, as they just got within two runs of the game. And if you watch that hit, that was not a hard hit right to the second baseman. That was not a bullet hit to the shortstop or third baseman where it's going to take some sort of ridiculous error to have you thrown out. That ball is a topped, slow-rolling ground ball to the shortstop. And I understand we've seen Stanton not run on purpose to stay healthy. And God knows, as much as we all hate him, and I know you do, they kind of need Gleyber to stay healthy. And if he's got a tight quad or groin or whatever, yeah, you don't want to push it in some scenarios. But here's how you know that Gleyber Torres is a losing player. Here is how you know Gleyber Torres is not a winning player. And he could tell you all you want about him being tight, and the manager can say it too. Fine, whatever. Here's how you know. That's instinct. And I'm sorry, you can't in that moment when you top one and roll one over to shortstop. If you don't, if your initial instinct is an I smell base hit, you are not a winning player. Plain and simple. That is not a bullet where you know, oh, it's already in the glove before you're two steps out of the box. That is a slow roller. And I don't care what your injury is. I don't care how tight your muscles are. Your instinct is initially smell hit. And in that moment, Gleyber Torres moped. That's what happened. He's struggling. He put his head down. He had another failed at bat, and he moped his way to first base. And I'm sick of it, and you're sick of it, and I can't watch it anymore. But there are no better answers. And that's what I've said last night, and that's what I'll say again today, and that's what I'll say again tomorrow. You want to bench him because he's in a slump, and you want to set an example? I'm okay with benching him, but here's the point of benching him. I'm not benching him so that I, Chris McMonagle, Yankee fan at home on my couch, can say, oh, at least the Gleyber's not playing today. I'm not benching him necessarily because he didn't run or he missed the play. I'm benching him if I feel it will help him the next time he plays. Because you can say whatever you want, and we can all say whatever we want. There are no other options for this team right now but Gleyber Torres. He's got to play better. And especially as this team completely flounders against left-handed pitching, Oswaldo Cabrera is abandoning hitting right-handed. He's abandoning it. He's hitting lefty versus lefties. You want to see him just because you can't look at Gleyber? Fine, I get it. I can't look at him either right now. I'm willing to give him a day, but it's got to be in the mode of getting Gleyber going. That's it. There's nowhere else to turn until the trade deadline. You got a month. And I said it last night, and one game isn't going to change it. He's 27 years old. I refuse to believe he's this bad. He's got to get it going. But that doesn't change the fact he was disgusting last night, and I'm disgusted with him. And I will be thrilled. And I hate saying it. You know I do. I will be thrilled next year when he's no longer a Yankee. And that sucks to say, but I'm with you. But that doesn't change the fact of where they are and what they need and who he is compared to everybody else. So we can bitch and we can complain, and I'm right there with you. But the manager's right when you say you need him. They need him. Look at the rest of this team. They need him. This isn't the Yankees being stubborn. This isn't anything other than a player who was their best hitter last year, who's 27 years old, and if he could get going, is without question the best option they have at second base. Now, there are other things in the lineup that I have a real problem with. I have no idea why Jones is in there DHing. Play Ben Rice. It makes absolutely no sense. Why is Rice not in the lineup? This is a young kid who's shown you good at bats. For DJ LeMahieu, who again hits ground ball after ground ball and does a little moping himself as he allows a ball to trickle past his glove. A sure double that he's frustrated as a hit. And he goes to, there's no question in my mind, he didn't get beat on it. He didn't get confused by it. He didn't think the ball was popping up. You could see him. He went and in a frustrated manner because he got beat by the shift and because the team is losing him because he sucks and he can't get his swing together. In frustration, he just completely gave it like the quick, let me grab it out of frustration and anger, and it went right past him. And if you want to get on Boone, let's get on Boone for this. He's got to get his players in the frame of mind. And I saw the captain, Aaron Judge, actually be extremely animated with DJ LeMahieu after that play in the dugout. Because that's the kind of crap that's unacceptable. And that's the kind of crap I put on the manager. Because DJ LeMahieu has to have the right frame of mind that he understands. He can't allow allowing singles to be turned doubles. Although, let's be honest, Lindor's going to steal second base anyway because Jose Trevino can't throw anybody out and the Yankee pitching staff doesn't seem to care. All of the ills, all of the holes came out against the Mets. And I told you yesterday, this was going to be an opportunity for the Mets to do it. And that offense right now is relentless. And they've got power up and down. Vientos is turning out to be what every Met fan hoped he could be. Nimmo gets a changeup and puts one out, and he's on a power surge. You're seeing how dynamic Lindor can be at the top of the lineup. Alvarez changes who they are, put up a great at-bat against Cole, which, let's be honest, Cole had nothing. Cole had nothing. I was concerned about his velocity until I heard him speak in the postgame. If he says he feels good, and let's be honest, Cole is by far the most open, honest, talks about pitching. I mean, he's drawing an analogy like he's a car. He's talking about himself like he's you know, an automatic and it's a stick shift. Like, the guy understands pitching and is able to talk about it as well as anybody. And if he wasn't feeling great, I think he'd tell you. So once he told me he's feeling good, I honestly don't care. I went into the game knowing he might be rusty. It's a tough game to lose. They're in the middle of a stretch, and he gave them no chance to win after this offense completely blew it. But I'm not that concerned about that. I'm not concerned about Cole. It was a rough outing. He had absolutely nothing. It seemed like he was afraid to come inside. It felt like he didn't want to throw his breaking balls. It felt like he was trying to dot that outside corner the entire game, and he couldn't. He's just coming back. His pitch count's down. He's working back. I am not concerned about Cole at all. The Mets right now, offense-wise, are the hottest team in all of baseball. They've won 14 out of their last 18 games. They've been a force. And you can watch it at bat after at bat. This Met team right now looks night and day offensively than what it's been all year prior to the last month. And it's a good baseball team and a good offense that took Cole deep four times without a strikeout. It's a unique Cole start. I am not putting anything else into that Cole start other than he doesn't have it yet. It's spring training. He's working his way back. It sucks that it's come right in the middle of the worst stretch of baseball this team has played. But there is no doubt Gleyber Torres and DJ LeMahieu are massive problems with this team. Massive. And DJ LeMahieu, who has dealt with a foot injury over the last 2 years, different ones now, he can't. That's why I was so concerned about this injury, because we saw what happens when he has a lingering foot injury. But you can't mope. I talked about Rodon and his moping. This team tends to mope. And you know what? I'll get on Boone for that. Get this team in the right frame of mind where they're able to deal with this failure every once in a while. Because let's be honest, here comes the part you're going to hate. They are in first place. And believe it or not, they've picked up a game since they've left the Baltimore series. And I still believe this team is a playoff team. And they've got holes to fix and holes to fill. And I do think the trade deadline, they'll get a lot of it done. I think they're going to be uber aggressive with a team that's in first place and has built up this kind of record. I think they're going to be uber aggressive, and we'll see how they go about it. But right now, they are playing trash. The bottom of the lineup's terrible. Gleyber Torres is absolutely out of his mind right now, has no clue what's going on. And while they go through this stretch, they can tell you all they want. They're not panicking. There's no fear in this clubhouse. There's no fear in the clubhouse. The greatest hitter, arguably, in the league, right? Besides Judge. The great Juan Soto they brought here laid down a bunt on what he thought was a 2-0 count, what was actually a 3-0 count. There's no fear. You got guys moping around. You've got Gleyber Torres not having the instinct to try and beat out a base hit. You've got DJ LeMahieu casually and frustratingly allowing a single to become a double on a light ground ball hit down the third base line. And there's no fear. That's why the bunt bothered me, because it reeks of fear. It reeks of it. It reeks of, oh, let me get a base hit. Oh, let me get on base. You're Juan Soto. You're the New York Yankees. Start freaking acting like it. Unbelievable how they played in this game. Unbelievable. It was absolute trash. Now, they worked their way back. I understand for the Mets, if you're looking at it from a Met perspective, which we will more, 888-808-1019, the bullpen is your fear. And you've got Diaz gone for 10 days. You're not sure where you're going to go from that point. I'm not sure how much Diaz being a closer impacted this game with the enormous lead. I mean, okay, maybe, you know, in the ninth with a two-run lead, you would have seen Diaz. But ultimately, when they got back into the game, would Diaz have pitched in that spot? I don't know. But right now, you're worried about the bullpen. And in that moment with Judge, how in the world he gets three strikes in an at-bat is mind-boggling to me. Now, I don't know if you have to walk him with the bases loaded, but you can't throw him an 0-2 fastball down the middle. Why would you pitch to this guy? Why would you pitch to him? We're going to see it. Make no mistake. We saw a couple things in this game that really jump out at me. One, Judge is not going to get pitched to. And two, even though the Red Sox got 9 steals, and even though Baltimore ran a little bit, this was the first game to me where it felt like the second we get on first, no matter who it is, whether it's Jeff McNeil, we are going to run because you can't stop the run. You can't stop stolen bases. And again, I know that there's been an issue here. We've been talking about it, so it's not brand new. But for whatever reason, this was the first time, because it wasn't just with Gunnar Henderson. It wasn't with just, you know, Hamilton and some of the speedsters on Boston and Duran. Like, this felt like it doesn't matter who gets on first. We're going to steal because you can't throw anybody out. That's the first time it's really felt like that. And that's a major problem. And there are tons of holes on this team. And last night showed it. And congratulations, Met fans. You've got us panicking. There is no doubt. After this game, watching Cole, who I don't have any fear about, but I'm sure many Yankee fans would, it might take some time to get him going, and who knows how long it's going to take. It could take 3-4 starts. I have no idea, but I trust eventually Cole will find himself. I don't know when, but he will. But right now, you're panicking about that. You're certainly panicking about everybody outside of this lineup after the third hitter in this team. Gleyber Torres is an absolute disgrace who needs to be off the team, right? DJ LeMahieu's washed up, who can't play anymore. They got, against left-handed pitching, they're just throwing anything against the wall and hoping it sticks. You got, you know, Jamai Jones, who's been a role player and a bench player this entire season, is the DH in this game. Like, it's right now the New York Yankees, for the first time, and the Mets did it to them, it felt like they're afraid of what's going on. It's the first time I felt like the New York Yankees are panicking about this lineup and are panicking that it's not going to be like 2022. The fan base has felt it now for a week. This is the first game the New York Yankees, whether it's Soto bunting in the first inning, whether it's hanging their heads, whether it's inept at bats from the new guy they just brought here in J.D. Davis, whether it's Jones, the DH, giving you crap at bats against the lefty, making Peterson look like Sandy Koufax out there. Congratulations, Met fans, because if you are the type of Met fan that gets a kick out of this, the New York Yankees have been embarrassed by you last night, despite it only being a two-run game, and the New York Yankees showed the first signs of not the fans, not guys like me talking on the radio, but the New York Yankees acted like they don't know what to do. 888-808-1019, 888-808-1019. We'll get to the different things that happened in this game, because there are other aspects of this game. And clearly, we'll get more into it from a Met standpoint. We'll let you Met fans crow and talk about how good you've looked and the depth of your starting pitching now, with Peterson being able to work out of that first inning jam and get all the strikeouts he got in this game. The bullpen's a scare, but honestly, it's just right now, this lineup top to bottom is just scary and relentless, and they've been the best hitting team for a month now. They're 14-4 over their last 18 games and feel like they are on their way to being, without question, a playoff team. And then when we get to this deadline, I've said a lot that I don't know if the Mets would ever buy. If this Met team could ever get them in a position where they would look to buy at the trade deadline, I think they're making their case. I think they're making their case. So we'll get to that. And then, of course, now that we're done with the yelling part of this 3-hour program, we'll get to the laughing part. Because make no mistake, And I've heard from a bunch of people walking into this building, listening to Keith. And you know I love Keith. But listening to Keith, listening to some of the Met fans, listening to Alex on the other side during Keith's show, I'm laughing at Met fans who actually think this was a good deal for the Nets. As Mikal Bridges is coming to the Knicks. And for what? For what? A bunch of worthless back end of the first round picks? We'll get to it because let me tell you, my friends, the Knicks made an incredible trade last night. An incredible trade. And right at the moment where Judge is hitting the grand slam, it was just like, I had a five-hour show yesterday. Where was this? I was hoping to mix both into the open, but I can't shut my mouth for 20 minutes. We'll have to do it when we get back. 888-808-1019. 888-808-1019. But yes, the Knicks made a tremendous trade, and I have no idea. Not that anybody cares. Just a handful. I happen to walk into the building and meet three or four of them. But I know none of you care on the Nets side of this thing. But my God, what are the Nets thinking? And now the Knicks bring that. Now they have the Villanova four. They're still going to sign OG. And this team right now looks like they are ready to make that run. Leon Rose, we love you. And we'll get to that next as well. We can call on it now, though, if you'd like. 888-808-1019. 888-808-1019. McMonagle here with you. Much more in depth into this despicable game, at least from a Yankee standpoint. And then, of course, the Mikal Bridges trade. And the Knicks acquiring him from the Brooklyn Nets and looking to be a force inside the Eastern Conference.
We know what we think. What do you think? Call the Fan. 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Stream the NFL on CBS live on Paramount Plus.
All right, 2:34. McMonagle here with you. All right, let's get to the Knicks. Nets trade a little bit. I yelled about the Yankees and the Mets. Let's quickly touch on this because it's a big enough story to warrant it, as obviously the New York Knicks acquired Mikal Bridges from the Brooklyn Nets for four unprotected first-round picks, a pick swap, a protected top four Bucks pick, and a second round pick. And I'm sorry, that is, I understand that's a lot of picks, right? You hear how many picks that is, right? So that's four unprotected first-round picks, another first-round pick, a swap, a second-round pick. And you're like, well, Mikal Bridges, while a good player, a very good player, a good shooter, plays every game, you know, led the league in minutes, I believe, a couple times, excellent player. I don't know if he's a superstar player. And so that sounds like a lot of picks. But here's the issue. Jalen Brunson and the New York Knicks are going nowhere. They're going absolutely nowhere. He's 27. Mikal Bridges now is 28. There's still room for OG Anunoby. I would expect them to still sign him. Yeah, okay. Hartenstein might go, and we'll talk about the element of that and the thing that bothers me about possibly losing Hartenstein, especially now that they have all these shooters. But you bring the Villanova four in, right? That's going to be great. This team is going nowhere. The Nets just got a bunch of back end of the first round trades. I mean, picks, excuse me. They couldn't get like McBride. They couldn't get another player. I know it's a lot of picks, but they couldn't get McBride or another player to come. Like, this is just, I'm sorry. This is a great trade for the New York Knicks. And I understand that there was, you know, I mean, you want a superstar? Who are the superstars coming? Right? I was listening this morning to Boomer and Geo, and Jerry was filling in, and they wanted no part of Paul George. Oh, no, Paul George. Well, I mean, these are the superstars. Mitchell's going to stay in Cleveland. Like, what superstars are coming? This is a player who fits in perfect with them. You know the chemistry is going to fit, right? They're best friends. It's going to be an extremely tight team and a tight group. We've seen the benefits of already having players who've won together from Villanova. You had another player like like Bridges, who can shoot, who can defend, who plays all the time. This is a great. I understand it's a lot of picks. The Knicks still have five picks over the next 3 years. So for the Knicks, I think it's a no-brainer. It's a no-brainer. And I'm sorry, for the Nets, this is a fan base that already has nothing, right? This is a Knicks town. You have one asset. And for a bunch of picks from a team that's going to be good for the next, I mean, you got the unprotected pick, sure, 25, 27, 29, 31, maybe 29 and 31 become something. Maybe. The protected Bucks picks in 25, I don't know what you think that's going to be. Right? This is, they are now right there as the top of the secondary rung inside the Eastern Conference. They are right there, just below the Celtics, which you have to give them credit for. I don't care who they played. I don't care how easy a route was. They went through the NBA playoffs like a hot knife through butter. All right, they're the best team in the NBA. They're the best team in the Eastern Conference. And this does not put, I can't tell you, this puts them on level with the Celtics. But I will go now that Randle coming back. I mean, listen to this. You have Brunson, Randle, Bridges, OG Anunoby. I don't think they're going to get Hartenstein back, which sucks because his offensive game and the passing, his passing ability with all these shooters would be tremendous. And we're going to find out because they can offer him some money. I don't know if they're going to be able to offer him enough to stay. It sounds like he's going to get a lot of offers from around the NBA. He's probably not going to be able to stay. We'll see. But I mean, we'll see if they play Randle at the five, but then you've got Hart, you've got McBride, who's really shown over the, you know, especially through the end of the season and into the playoffs when they needed him because of injury, how he stepped up. DiVincenzo. I mean, you are going to have one of the deepest rosters in the NBA, bar none. And now a starting five that rivals anyone this side of the Boston Celtics inside the Eastern Conference. And, you know, for it to come about this quickly because, like, I can't help but look at this a little bit from the Nets angle because, and I even tweeted this out, like, to be an NBA player, I know he had some leverage when he said, I want to be a Knick. And I'm going to tell any team that inquires about trading for me that I intend to sign with the Knicks once I hit free agency. So I understand that limits maybe some of the Nets prospects, but I'm sorry. I can't. It's the first trade since 1983. I wasn't even alive the last time these two franchises made a trade. And I'm sorry, but you have to compete on some level with the New York Knicks just for fans and I don't know about back pages anymore, but you can't just give it. You can't give him to the Knicks, and especially when this isn't a aging Knick team looking for one more shot at it. Like, this is a young group that's going to be good for a long time. Now, anything could happen. I get that. Anything could happen. Knock on wood, but there could be devastating injuries. There could be whatever. So maybe it's a little simplistic for me and a little short-sighted of me to say these picks are meaningless, but I'm sorry. These picks are meaningless. I understand there's a lot of them, and they're in rebuild mode, and then they just made a very good trade with Houston to get some of their own picks back because they're going to be terrible. So Nets have gone into rebuilding mode, but to just hand over your biggest asset, the one player worth watching, just to give them to the Knicks for a bunch of picks at the back end of the first round, this is a fantastic move for the New York Knicks. I mean, it doesn't get better than this. He's not the best player I could think of, but he fits the team perfectly. You know this group is extremely tight, and there's no doubt that their tightness has led to where they are. And to now add another player they've already been at war with, another player they've won with, another player who is going to fit, buy in, part of this Knick culture that is developing here, doesn't get hurt, plays all the time, can shoot. I mean, he checks almost all the boxes to fit inside this Jalen Brunson-led team. And I just think, I know it's a lot of picks, but what are they going to do? The Knicks have two first-round picks this year. Anybody that particularly excited about it? Right? Anybody particularly excited about the Knicks picks? They're going to add some depth to the roster, hopefully. Great. The Nets just got four of those. Bravo. And they just gave the Knicks the title of the second best team in the Eastern Conference. What a day, right? And especially right in the moment. The moment could not have been more bizarre. Because we're watching this, and you know, again, I can give you the both perspectives, but I am a Yankee fan. So as I'm watching this crap, as I'm watching this team fold, as I'm watching Gleyber Torres hit you in every way, shape, and form, whether it's the first at bat strikeout, whether it's the defensive play, whether it's not running out of ground ball, I'm watching the Gleyber Torres experience, and they're just starting to get back into it. Namely, well, Ben Rice was a part of it. What a shocker. Play the kid. That bothers me more than anything. Guys are hung up on where Gleyber Torres hits. Why isn't Ben Rice out there? But as I'm watching this slop, the game just gets interesting. I go to check Twitter after the grand slam just to see the panic in the Met fan and know that we share some of the idiocy along the fan bases. Or a little the panic, should I say. Because I know there's Met fans who thought they were going to lose the game the second that ball went over the wall. So, and then I see this. I'm like, what? What an experience. 888-808-1019. I think this is going to be a huge success for the New York Knicks. And right now, I mean, we're going to be... We haven't experienced this because even last year, it became this after January, right? Into the playoffs, it became this real high pitch, this fever pitch love for this team. But we didn't go into the season that way. We had fair expectations. You thought the Knicks would be a playoff team. You hoped that, you know, I don't think anybody really thought that they would be on par with Milwaukee, with Boston, with Philadelphia. You thought they'd be right there with the rest of the teams just below those three. So there was excitement, don't get me wrong. Looking forward to Brunson's second year, you know, knew there could be some moves possibly with all the picks they've built up, but this is going to be different. From the beginning, from opening night, there are going to be expectations of NBA finals. That's what the Nets just provided the New York Knicks, as well as the basketball player. They provided the Knicks and this town, the excitement of making an NBA Finals while your squad is about to fade away into irrelevancy. And I understand Sean Marks has done a very good job building up this team in prior his first real go-round before the disaster that was the super team. But I don't care what Mikal Bridges walked into my office and said, I'm not trading him to the Knicks. Not trading him to the Knicks. I don't care. You want to go there. I don't care. I would have held out a little bit. I wouldn't have just said, oh, you want to go to the Knicks? Sure. Let me call Leon Rose right now. Hey, Leon, throw me like an extra pick or two and a swap than you normally thought you would have. No, don't give me McBride. No, cool. You keep him. No, we'll take Bogdanovich back. Thanks. 888-808-1019. Peter in Manhattan. What's up, Pete?
How are you doing, Chris? That's a family. Great show. Chris, this is a quick comment of the Yankees. Despite these losses, they still picked up a game on Baltimore, incredibly.
Well, I'm confused about this again, because are you telling me Baltimore lost to Cleveland?
Yeah, they've lost five straight games. Cleveland.
I'm very confused. Just run it by me one more time. So the Orioles have lost five consecutive games. Is that true?
Right, and okay, Cleveland now has the best record in the AL.
Okay, wait. All right, well, let's just take this a step at a time. And they've lost two of those last three to the Cleveland Guardians?
Right.
And they have the best record in the American League now?
Cleveland, yes.
And one more question just to make sure I get it straight. And the Cleveland Guardians play in the AL Central, is that correct?
Right, yes.
Oh, okay. Because I wasn't sure there were actually any baseball teams in the AL Central, but apparently there are. And, you know, they win some games and they have the best. It's just, I'm puzzled by it because I'm trying to figure it out. I'm very confused by the whole thing, to be honest with you. Because I thought Baltimore, you know, beats everybody and I thought Cleveland was worthless and you know, trying to mark yourself against them was just a waste of time. So I'm trying to figure it out.
Yeah, good one. That's a good one. Yeah.
I'm glad
you
know
what the yesterday and Paul with the Knicks now. What do they need? I mean, you said Paul, what do they need now to compete with Boston to make them, you know, a real championship club? I mean, they're close to it. So what do you need? I'll hang up to hear it. Thanks for taking my call. So at this point, what do they need, and is it feasible to get? Thank you, Chris. You'll be well.
Yeah, you got it. What do they need now? Well, now, listen. One, stay healthy, and if they bring OG back, then now you've got Randall, who has a little bit of a history now, ending last year, the ankle injury in the playoffs the year before. But I'm not so worried about Randall being injury prone. But certainly you are about OG Anunoby. Mitchell Robinson, you're worried about. So, I don't know what they need other than if they could figure out a way to bring back Hartenstein, then I don't think they need anything, to be totally honest with you. I mean, other than just, you know, better players at the positions they already have. But I mean, they'll have plenty of shooting now between and plenty of scoring, right? You got Randall gets to the basket, Hart who can get to the basket and play defense. I mean, you've got defense, you've got scoring, you've got shooting, you've got depth. I mean, if McBride continues to progress and hope he can, you know, get into what quickly was a little bit and be that the leader of the second unit, but you know how good he is defensively. Like, you've got Hart, you've got Hart for rebounding, you've got Mitchell Robinson for rebounding, you've got Brunson, Bridges, Randall as just scorers and shooters on some level, the two of them, but then you've got a real shooter in DiVincenzo. Like, you've got what I would love is a big man who can defend the rim but also pass, because that's what we saw from Hartenstein. His ability to pass the basketball helps. And that inside-out game where you can, you know, go down low to him, set up shooters, quick passes out to the corner, like that kind of thing helps. So when I look at this roster now, it's not complete. They're going to have to finish this. But as I look at it, who's going to play five? Does he have any offensive ability if it's Mitch Robinson? Can I trust him to stay healthy? Other than that, I don't know what they need anymore. Because a superstar is not going to happen now. I mean, they do have five picks still remaining, but this was the move. This was the move. They made the move. And although I wouldn't classify him, and hopefully I can use the word yet, because I don't know, but we wouldn't have classified Brunson as a superstar until he became one. But although he's not a superstar, it's a lot of picks. Don't get me wrong. It is a lot of picks. And if you're just going to look at it like that, I get it. If you're just going to say, wow, what a haul for a player who wasn't a superstar. Okay, it's certainly a lot of picks. But what value do those picks have? Like, honestly, what real value? Unless you believe the Knicks are going to fall apart, what real value do those picks have? Because I don't think they have much. Certainly not the next two. They got four unprotected first-round picks from the Knicks. They're not going to be good in the next 3 years. They're going to be good. They're going to be good. They're going to be good enough to be a playoff team. There's no doubt about it. They're going to be good enough to be a playoff team. Rocco in Saratoga. What's up, Rocco?
Go, New York. Go, New York. Go, New York Knicks. Go. Go. Hey, Chris.
Hey, you're right.
Leon Rose, executive of the year. The guy is
he's done an incredible job. I mean, yeah. You have to admit he's done an incredible job.
Oh, absolutely.
There is he built, in my opinion, last year's Knicks team when healthy was the only team in the Eastern Conference that could even give a series to Boston. Now he's improved it. They're about as deep as any team in the league. He's still got the option and the ability to sign OG Anunoby. I mean, right now, other than, you know, getting that other real superstar to go with Jalen Brunson, I think you can argue that they have a superstar in Brunson, and they have two players who are right at that next tier just before becoming a superstar in Randall and Bridges. So, I mean,
well, yeah, that's what makes the team. You don't need extra superstars. Jalen is the big scorer. Everyone else scores well. These guys, Bridges plays every game, 82 games. He hasn't missed a game since he's joined the NBA.
Yeah, no,
it's incredible.
It is incredible. You hope it continues. Yeah.
Yeah, I hope so. Hey, don't jinx it, Chris. Now, stop. Yeah.
I'm just saying.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, but yeah, no, he is. He's going to be fine. Now you have the Villanova Four. This is all Jay Wright. Jay Wright put these guys together.
Yeah.
He helped them at Villanova how to play ball together, right? Two championships. If Jay Wright would have stayed, you know, who knows how many more he could have won, right?
No, he's a great head coach.
Evaluator, right?
Yeah.
And when he was at Hofstra all the way back in the day. I don't know if you remember.
I do remember. I do remember him coaching Hofstra. Mike and the Mad Dog went to a Hofstra game and did a Hofstra play-by-play thing.
Okay, yeah, yeah. Jay Wright put these guys, told them how to, you know, this is how to play team ball. They won two championships 1 year apart. He could have been Hurley, right? They won what in 16 and then again in 18.
Yeah, all right, but I understand. But we're talking about the Knicks. We're not talking about Villanova.
All right,
I know that.
Yeah,
I know all the guys.
That's
I understand
the background of these guys. Four of them on one team.
I understand.
That's the championship. They won. They can play in New York. They played in Philly. There's no pressure on them. They love the New York fans and everything. And they get down on themselves when they don't come through. They don't blame someone else like other people. LeBron.
Well, I mean,
they don't blame other people.
I get that. And you want to, you know, LeBron went to how many straight NBA finals? I mean, I understand he might have blamed people, but can the Knicks make one before we start saying they're more successful champions than LeBron, who's won championships and went to like what, seven straight Eastern Conference championships and went to seven straight NBA finals? John and Hazlitt, what's up, John?
What's up, brother?
What's Big going man. On? Thank you, bro. What's going on?
Same old. Big win for the Mets tonight. And it's got me thinking, what's this GM going to do? Is he going to get influence to the owner to get pushed to get to this playoffs? Or are they going to stand pat and trade everybody?
Yeah, I mean, they're not going to trade everybody. That's for sure. And sorry, your call just sounded a little tinny. I apologize. But thank you for the call. They're not going to trade they're not trading. And there was a report a couple days ago that I railed against then. I'll rail against it again. The idea that they think they have enough starting pitching depth where they can, you know, trade away some of it and still compete is absolutely, I hate it. You can't trade Severino. I hate it. So I think they're going to, at the very least, stand pat. The question is, will they buy? Has this team, will it give them enough to go out there and really like look? And again, it's one thing just to get bullpen arms, right? I don't know what it'll cost you to just get an average reliever because you need some help. You need another arm in the bullpen to trust on some level. Or, but are you going to shop in the top end? Are you going to look for an eighth inning guy? Are you going to look for a premier strikeout guy that might cost you some prospects? Are you going to look to, if you can't count on right field right now, with Marte's knee injury, if he comes back and this bone inflammation or bone bruise or whatever is going to cause him a problem, or are you just not, like, are you going to look to add a piece like that? Are you going to really look to bolster this team for a World Series run? I'm still not convinced they want to do that. But there will come a time. There will come a level of play. And right now, if you watch this game last night, they are playing as good a brand of baseball. Now, Peterson was okay. He struck out a bunch of guys, but only went 4 1/3 through 100 pitches. And the Yankees helped him out. But could you use another starter? Sure. But, I mean, are they going to add a starting pitcher and cost yourself and shop at the top of the market starting pitching? I don't know. I know they're getting Senga back eventually, hopefully. So we'll see what they want to do. But I don't know. I think that's the question. And that's why we talked about how important this stretch of baseball was, and they are making the most of it. They're absolutely making the most of it. And even no matter what happens tomorrow, the Mets have done it. I know this, you know, I don't know. Everyone, you want to win every game, but I'm just saying they've won now. Even if tomorrow, they're still playing great baseball. Tomorrow's a much more important game for the Yankees than Luis Gil, because I'll tell you right now, if Luis Gil folds, if Luis Gil gets beat up by this team that is now beat up on starting pitching, look at the names. And I know, in my opinion, Cole didn't have anything. And, I mean, it is what it is. He's still Gerrit Cole. And he still put up a performance where you hit four home runs and didn't allow a strikeout. I mean, Cole doesn't have performances like that. Even in some of his worst years in Pittsburgh, and when I use the term worst loosely, but even his lesser years in Pittsburgh, I doubt he had a year like a game like that. So you're talking about taking down Gerrit Cole, Imanaga, Dylan Cease, John Gray. Like, you've done it against good starting pitching. This has not been a stretch where you're playing these bad teams, although some of them have had losing records and aren't that good. But, I mean, you've done it against their best. You've done it against their premier starting pitching. What was the other guy? I forget the Cub. What was the other Cub pitcher name they beat in the rubber match? He was having a great year before they beat him. They've done a really great job offensively. So that's the question. Can they play well enough to convince this GM to add and bolster it and give them a chance to be one of the better teams in the National League? Assad, if you look at his numbers, he was having a great year.